Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Emma Napoleon. Emma Napoleon is a passionate young writer and advocate for self-care and mental health. At just 15 years old, she co-authored the best-selling book, Love Yourself First Too, which is a book that offers a perspective on healing, self-love, and growth in many areas of mental and emotional health. Now, Emma is writing a new book titled Living in the Shadows, Finding Your Voice When You Feel Left Out, where she shares her personal journey of healing through grief, feeling misunderstood, and navigating the darkness when others expect sunshine. Her story offers an empowering message for teens who may feel alone or invisible, teaching them that it's okay to heal in their own time and way. Through her writing, Emma is on a mission to help others find their voice, embrace their uniqueness, and break free from the shadows. Emma, thank you so much for making time for me on the Teaching Journeys podcast today. I'm excited about our conversation.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm so excited to be here and share everything. And yeah, this is a great opportunity, so thank you.
You're welcome. And for those of you who might recognize the last name Napoleon, Emma Napoleon is the daughter of Christina Napoleon, who is the author of The Positive Widow. And we have been trying to get Emma as a guest on the podcast now for what, about a year?
Yes, about a year, I would say.
But as with anything, life tends to happen. The universe has a plan different than ours. And I know a couple of hurricanes hit your native Florida, and you and your mom were both displaced from your home, and you were pretty much just trying to pick up the pieces. And I know that was a year-long journey for you two. And I can see now you're back in your home. And I know, you know, we talked before we went on the air that you are in the process of rebuilding. But I am personally glad that both you and your mom are safe, that you are back in your home. Everything is returning, I don't want to say to normal, but there's some sense of routine back in your life after the hurricanes.
Yeah, thank you so much. And yeah, it has been, since it hit, everything changed. But we've been slowly getting back to what it was beforehand. So I'm grateful that we're okay and that we still have our house. Yeah.
Beyond the bio.
Okay.
Who is Emma Napoleon? What do you want our audience to know about? What you're passionate about? What you like to do, you know, for hobbies in your spare time? Anything you're comfortable sharing, Emma?
As you said, my name's Emma Napoleon, and I'm 16 years old. I have written, I've co-authored in a book, Love Yourself First Too, and I'm currently writing my first book that I will be most likely done with soon. I don't know when yet. I'm going to call it Living in the Shadows. And I like to go to the gym pretty often. And I like to visit animal shelters. I love animals. And my goal and my passion is to help people, most likely teens, that feel misunderstood and they feel invisible, to feel understood and to feel visible to others. And not have to feel like, because they feel a certain way, that they can't be the person they want to become.
Wow. When I was 16 years old, I think, I don't know what I was doing when I was 16, but it sure as heck wasn't all the advocacy work you're doing and wanted to be a voice for those teens who are misunderstood. And I sure as heck didn't write my first book at 15. So you're a little farther ahead on the learning curve than I was at 15. So, by the way, you are the youngest guest I have had on the Teaching Journeys podcast.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yes, I did have another young author, but she was 17 and I had her last year. So but you are now my youngest guest of record on the Teaching Journeys podcast. And as I told you before, you're here to teach me about your journey and about what you've learned about grief and everything else that you've gone through. Let's get to your book that you co-authored, Loving Yourself First Too. What inspired that book? What is it about? And what do you want people who read it to take away from it?
I was asked by one of my mom's friends, who is the author of the book. She's very close with us. She asked me if I wanted to write a chapter in it, and the chapter would be a letter to my past self, what I would say to give myself tips with and to let me know that it's going to be okay. And at first I was thinking this will be something fun that I can just do. And then as I started to write it, it really unleashed a lot of emotions that I haven't thought of in a very long time. And it honestly helped me feel what I haven't felt. Like, as I was writing it, I was talking about how I grieved and that I'm going to be okay. And even though in that moment it felt like the world ended, that you can still go. And it was honestly motivational for me just to be writing that to myself. And the whole book is amazing because it really shows you everyone has a different story. And even when you think that what happened to you is the worst thing ever, as time moves on, you do get better. That doesn't mean that you're going to feel better forever. Obviously, there's going to be times where you're down again, but it helps you kind of get yourself back up.
Yeah, and I think when you contribute to a collaborative effort like that and you read other people's stories, I think for me, I would realize, one, I'm not alone in my pain. I'm not alone in my challenges. But I think you also understand that other people have it as bad or worse than you, and they have come out of the shadows. They've developed resilience. They've tried to engage in life with meaning. And I would think that would have to be inspirational for anybody who is reading it.
100%. Yes, it absolutely was.
Now you've mentioned you've been through grief. Can you tell our audience a little bit about your grief journey? What has been the loss that has really shaped your perspective on life and death and perhaps even life after death?
Yeah, of course. When my dad first died, I was 6 years old. So I didn't know a lot about death. The only death I had before that was my dog. And I always thought, oh, he's going to come back. And my dad's death was a very long-term thing because he had cancer. So it was this waiting and waiting and waiting if he was going to get better, if he didn't. And I would always tell myself, he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. And then when he wasn't, I didn't believe it. I truly thought that he just like was going to come back. He was going to go to heaven to heal and then come back normal. And then I would say within like a couple years, seeing how my mom was and everything, it kind of made me realize like he's never coming back. And that's when it started to get a little bit harder, because I would go to school and I would see kids running around with their dad or going to the park, or their dads would pick them up early. And it was hard because I didn't get to experience that anymore. I've always kind of been a barrier for a while. So I would kind of just not think about it. I would try to distract myself, just swallow it, whatever, because I knew my mom was hurting and I didn't want to hurt, because I didn't want her to have to handle both of us hurting. So I tried being there for her more than her having to be there for me. And then as I got into middle school, it's kind of like an awkward phase in your life. Whenever people would bring it up and they would feel sorry for me, I was like, I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I don't like being the girl that everyone has to look at and feel sorry for. So I started to make jokes about it instead of being the sad girl in the corner like I was when he first died. And then as I got older, I didn't want to be the person who would just make jokes out of everything. I wanted to handle it on a more mature level. And so now when I think about it, it's like, yeah, it sucks that he's not in my life anymore. And I wish he was there for my middle school graduation, for HOKA, which is homecoming, and soon prom and all of that. But I'm also grateful that now I can talk to him like in my head whenever I want to. And obviously I wish he was here, but there's nothing I can do about that. And there's just ways that I can still talk to him, and I can look at pictures of him and miss him. in a way that doesn't hurt as much as it used to. And obviously there's still times where it does hurt. But in my opinion, it's a matter of how you grow as a person. Your grief kind of grows with you.
I think that's a really, really great perspective. And you're right. Your grief does grow with you. It doesn't go away. It just looks different, I think, as the years go on. And the fact that you still talk to your father is a healthy way to navigate grief, because I'm a firm believer, and I've learned this in my own grief journey, that just because the person experiences a physical death doesn't mean the relationship dies with it.
Yeah.
You can maintain that relationship with your father, you can talk to your father, you can transform the relationship where you have a continued bond with your dad in spirit. You can transform the relationship where when you see maybe a favorite toy that he bought you when you were 5 or 6 years old, that gets you thinking, perhaps, you know, that memory with the toy, and gets you thinking about all the other experiences as well. So, and it also sounds like your grief manifested differently as you got older. As the meaning of death, I think, evolved as you evolved developmentally, as you got more abstract thinking skills, as you were able to conceptualize. It sounded like you re-experienced the loss of your dad differently. Am I correct to assume that? Could you tell us a little bit about how your grief kind of resurfaced through the developmental stages of your life?
As a kid, obviously, you're still in this zone where everything's okay. You're raised off of TV shows where there's always a happy ending and everything like that. So in my mind, it's okay. Everything's going to be okay. There's no problem. He's going to come back. And then once I got older, that mindset changed. And I think as the mindset changed, so did my health, kind of in like a mental way. I started to not think positive about things. And if someone got hurt or something, I thought it was the end of the world. And I started to get really anxious at age 10, because that's when my grandma also died. So I was like, everyone in my life has died. I'm cursed. Like, if I picked up paper the wrong way, it meant that my mom would die or something like that. And then that would be there for a while. And then as I got older, I had to remind myself, yes, bad things have happened. I've lost my dad. But that doesn't mean that bad things are going to continue to happen. And no matter what, I can still talk to him. The relationship is not gone. And the love for him obviously isn't. And I know that he's with God, because I do believe in God. And I just think that as I grow, my mind grows, and it gives me a new perspective on it.
And I think your perspective will continue to shift and will continue to grow for as long as you are alive on this earth. I'm 70 years old now, okay? Yeah, and I'm still learning. You know who I learn the most from? My students. They teach me more about life than I could probably, they teach me a lot. And I continue to just learn and to grow, and I continue to be excited about it. And my grief will continue to grow until I am called to be alongside God. So I think what you have is a very healthy perspective, and it sounds like you've had a lot of support along the way. Your mom and everybody, everybody in your life has helped you get to that. But that's a great perspective to have.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I want to ask you this question about teens and grief.
Okay.
Do you think teens are misunderstood when it comes to grieving losses? What is it that we need to know? I guess it can help us hold space for teens that are grieving.
Yeah. I would say that the teen grieving is very different, because adults, they see it more of as a responsibility thing. Like, I have to help whoever was in this person's life. And they also take it as, like, they handle it more maturely, whereas teenagers, we do have a lot of hormones going on and different emotions, and we don't necessarily know what we're thinking. We kind of just go out of things in a second. Our brain just feeds us a bunch of information. And nowadays, especially with social media, there's so many rumors about different things. We don't know what's true. So if someone were to die, from, say, cancer or heart attack, they might try to look into that on social media to get support, and they could end up getting the complete opposite, like saying just a bunch of random things. Like, we definitely don't know everything yet, and I don't think we ever will, but we will soon learn more as we get older. But right now, we're definitely at a more sensitive place in our mindset, and little things set us off way more than it would set off an adult.
One of the things I've learned about teens, and having three children of my own, teens feel feelings intensely, probably more intensely than adults. And I think, as you mentioned, it's because of the hormonal changes, puberty, and those changes that occur as a result of that. And I think as adults, we need to really just roll with it and try to provide a safe place for that to happen and try to understand what is going on with that young adult so that we can effectively, you know, be of service to them or help them through whatever crisis they're going through, particularly with death. 6 years old, I think you had mentioned this, that, you know, I mean, at 6 years old, most 6 years old don't think death is permanent. They think it's reversible. They're coming back. And then when you get to an age of, like, where you're beginning to conceptualize, you realize that, you know, death is permanent. Then it takes a whole new meaning. And then coupled with the hormonal changes, that just has to just really put your emotions in a place where it seems almost overwhelming.
Yeah, 100%. It does.
I want to ask you about your dad a little bit. What memories do you have of your father? What can you tell us about your dad, the person he was, what you remember about him growing up, and particularly in terms of how you got to understand your dad also through your conversations with your mom?
My dad, from memories and from what my mom has said, was definitely like an angel on earth. Like, he was so down to earth. He was so nice to everybody, even when he had every opportunity not to be. And he was the funniest man alive, in my opinion. He could make the most stuck-up person laugh. Like, he was just very funny. He had very good energy, and he was very loving, especially to me. And he would just do, like, if I wanted him to play dolls with me and he had to be a little prince and I was a little princess, he would do that. And he would push me on the swing, and he would go in the pool with me and just play games with me for hours if that's what I wanted him to do. If I just asked him, can I go to the park? He would say, yeah, let's go right now. Just get your shoes on. And he definitely did everything in his power that he could to make me feel loved as a kid. And I'll always be grateful for those times, because even though we didn't have a lot of time, he sure as heck made a lot of good memories with me in the time that we did have.
Yeah, it sounds like he packed a lot of love in living with you in the short amount of time that you had the earthly father and daughter relationship. It sounds like just a very warm, very spontaneous, very fun guy, very loving guy. It sounds like somebody who would literally give you the shirt off of your back, of his back if you needed it.
100%, yes. Yeah.
And I know I've asked you and your mom to come up with some pictures, and we're going to make sure that we put these in the podcast somewhere. Thank you for sharing about your dad. And I look forward to getting those pictures and putting them together and making them a part of the video version of the podcast. So now let's talk about your project in the works. This is your own solo author project. Am I correct?
Yes.
So it's Living in the Shadows, Finding Your Voice When You Feel Left Out. Tell our audience what the book is about, what inspired you to write it, and why you want to get the message out now.
Okay.
About grief.
Yes. So after mom started her business, we all know that her brand is the Positive Widow, and she was always about positivity and fighting your way out of the dark. And me, as a 14, 15-year-old, I was easily manipulated by anything I heard. So I would tell myself, well, if she's saying get out of the dark and that's what I find comfort in, then clearly I'm not okay. And she would ask me, oh, Emma, I'm doing all these things. You should come with me. You should speak with me. And in my head, I'm like, but I can't, because I don't see things the way she does. I wasn't seeing brightness as the end of a tunnel. I honestly found comfort in the darker parts of the tunnel and thunderstorms, whereas she was the total opposite. And I didn't think I could help anybody. I was like, well, how can I help someone if I'm clearly still on the other side? But I also started to realize as I got older that even though I find comfort in the darkness, it doesn't mean that I'm not getting better. It doesn't mean that I'm still depressed. It just means that that's what I find comfort in. And I feel like ever since, even when I was little in movies, the villain was always the one in the dark and the hero was always the one on the bright side with the sunshine. So I thought I couldn't do anything with the dark because it was that. And I've realized that that's not true. And even though that's what a lot of people put into our brains, that it doesn't mean that that's true. So this book is to help people who feel misunderstood, that think that because they heal a certain way that they're not healing, and that no matter what they go through and what they find comfort in, that if that helps them, then that's all they need to know. And that's how they can help themselves.
I think it's also very perceptive that you believe and you understand that embracing the darkness can be of just as much help for us as embracing the light.
Yes.
And, you know, I've said this on my podcast before and on other podcasts that the best work that we do to create awareness about ourselves and our place in the world, particularly after tragedy, is by getting down and getting into the dark parts of our existence, because the darkness has as much to teach us as anything. And plus, in my experience, we live in this like super positive society where everybody's got to be happy. Yeah. And I don't know about you, Emma, but I've never run into anybody who's been happy 24/7. And the thing is that we can learn so much from our sadness. The saddest people I know have been the most compassionate people I know. The most confused individuals, because of what's happened to them, end up becoming the individuals with the most clarity because they sit with that confusion and eventually they come to some insights as to what they need to do. So I think embracing all that's a part of our existence is key for growth and key for genuineness. So the fact that you recognize this now, I think is really, really good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I will probably be one of the first ones to order your book when it comes out. So you or your mom better let me know when that's happening.
Thank you so much. We definitely will. Thank you.
You're welcome. One of the things that I needed to ask you, and I know we talked about this before we started to record, and you know, the mantra of this podcast is we're all students and teachers, so let's learn from each other. So today I'm a student and you're the teacher. So in that vein, I want you to tell our audience, what does the older generation need to know to effectively understand the needs of teenagers? Now, we're just not talking about grief. We're talking about the whole package.
I would say that there is a lot of pressure on teenagers because not only do we have our teachers, parents, and our family on us, but we also have social media watching our every move. Nowadays, if you do something to offend someone, they post it on social media and possibly ruin your reputation for life. You have to basically walk on eggshells around people that you know have a social media platform, because just one post and your life could be changed forever. And not only that, but we also have our hormonal changes. We don't know what's going on and we're stressed out, and we also have to get good grades in our sports and do everything as we're told to, and it can be a lot of pressure. And at my age, 16 or even younger, you're starting to get jobs and you have to learn how to work with other people and not just in a school type of place. There's definitely a lot of pressure on teenagers because it's when your life is starting.
And you know, as somebody who teaches college students, I remember what it was like for me to be a student back in the day, back in the 70s, and what it's like for students to be, for young adults to be a student now. And you're right, there's just much, much, much more pressure. We didn't, back in my day, we didn't have 24-hour news. We didn't have social media. We didn't have cyberbullying. We didn't have a lot of the financial pressures that students particularly or want to go to college are facing, with student loans and also trying to work, trying to go to school, trying to have somewhat of a normal life with boyfriends, with girlfriends, and try to fit all of that in with the pressures that we're living under now and in the world that we're living under now. It's got to be a daunting task. And what scares me most is the suicide rates that seem to be very high in young adults. And I think with all of the pressure that's going on, it's not a surprise to me. We also see a lot of, and I'm sure you've seen this with a lot of your friends and a lot of your, or you've heard that there's a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety issues with young adults your age and above. And I think one of the things for me is I've learned to respect my students that they have other categories in their lives. They're just not students. They're brothers, they're sisters, they have parents, they have grandparents, they have friends, they have relationships. Life happens. Sometimes they have to be taken away from school to deal with life. Then I think we have to really make room for that and try to work with the increasing demands that they're under. And also, for me, if I see a student that looks like they're just depressed or sad, I'll pull them aside. Because, you know, my history of having lost a child already, you know, my students become an extension of my family, and I don't want to lose another one. So if I see somebody who's out of sorts, I'll sit down and I'll just check in with them and just let them know that, are you okay? Is everything okay? You seem to be just having an off day. And even if they don't want to talk about it, they at least know that I care.
That's great that you do that with your students. Like, you check in on them and you're aware that they don't, that their life just doesn't revolve around college and school, that they also have a life outside of it. Because I feel like a lot of people do forget that. So thank you for being so caring and aware of young adults and everything that they go through. You can just kind of give them the benefit of the doubt.
And I think the other thing is the older, thank you for that too, by the way, and is the older generation too, I think we need to understand what young adults' interests are. And we can do that without trying to act like a young adult. But yeah. I mean, I'll talk to my students and I'll ask them, hey, what's going on TikTok? Have you been Snapchatting lately? What have you been doing on Instagram? Other things that are in their lives. What kind of music are you listening to lately? One of my students got me hooked on Post Malone. It was just really cool. They said, you got to listen to Post Malone. And I said, okay. So they sent me the link to their latest, his latest CD. And I got it streaming on my music app. So, you know, it's just like, you know, the biggest thing I think for me is that we need to focus on building relationships with our young adults. Whether you're a professor, build a relationship. You want them to come back and be able to talk with you and not feel like, oh, this person isn't going to understand me or doesn't want to understand me. It's like, we got to create that space, because my job, and I'm paraphrasing kind of a Native American saying, is that the Native Americans believe that there's four seasons in life. And it's in the fourth season of our life, which is the elders, it's our job to pass on to the younger generation the teachings of the first three seasons. And I can't do that if I'm not respecting the needs of those young adults. So,
no, that's 100% true, everything that you just said. And I love that you believe in all of that. And it makes sense. I had a teacher last year. It was a horrible school year. And she's the one, like, really good thing I got out of it, because she wasn't just a teacher. If I was down or something like that, she'd give me a hug. She would talk to me after class if I needed it. She was there for me, not just in school, but also with troubles that were out of school and everything like that. And she truly did make an impact in my life. And I think teachers like you and like her, we need more of them, because they really, really help teenagers out more than you guys are even aware of.
Yeah. I tell anybody to listen to me, I said, it's a blast hanging around the younger generation. And it really is, because I get infused with their young energy. I feel alive. And of course, I have the young energy of my daughter that's firmly ingrained in me as well, too. So, and I tell my students who take death, dying, and bereavement with me, they know my history. They know my loss history. I'm very open with that. And I tell them, you're usually getting a package deal. If you see a lot of young energy coming through me, it's my daughter's influence. But it's also the influence of those other students that I've had the privilege of teaching over 22 years. Yeah, I mean, it's a blast working with the younger generation. It really is, because you guys are the future. And if I can play a role in shaping that future in a way that's going to be meaningful, I can lead this earth with peace.
That sounds great. Yeah. Thank you again for saying the beginning you said.
My pleasure. So is there anything else you want to add about your new book that's going to be coming out? Anything that we haven't covered with that?
The main goal for the book is to help misunderstood people feel understood and that they're not alone in what they're going through. And even if they feel like they're the only ones at all experiencing this, that even if I haven't experienced the same thing, no matter what, there's someone that can help you get through that and things that can help you get through things that you go through.
That is a book that I will recommend to anybody that that I come across with. And I'm anxious, like I said, when it comes out, I want to be the first one to grab a copy. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. Now, question for you. You've left our audience with a lot of good stuff today, you know, sharing your experiences from your perspective. You've left us a lot of good information today. But if you're going to leave our audience with one ultimate takeaway that you want them to remember from today, what would that be, Emma?
I would say that if you feel like you just can't get unstuck in what you're feeling and that you feel like nobody else in the world relates to you at all, that there are people who relate to you and there are people that can help you. And if you just feel like you're misunderstood completely and that nobody else will understand what you're going through, even if they don't understand it, they can still be there for you and help you through everything. And that whatever you find comfort in, don't let anybody take that away from you. And don't let anyone's opinion change how you feel about a subject or yourself or somebody.
Yeah, I kind of the way I would sum that up is don't let anybody steal your mojo.
Yeah.
You know, who you are is beautiful, and just be your authentic self, see yourself through your own eyes and leave your mark in the world. And also understand that there will be somebody that's going to hold space for you, that's going to listen to you, and that's going to value your life, maybe at times when you're not valuing your own.
Yeah.
For those of you who want to find out more about you, contact you, find out about the book that you've already published or purchase the book that you've already, you know, contributed a chapter to, what's the best way for them to do that?
I would say reach out to my social media, my Instagram or my TikTok. My TikTok is just my full name, lowercase emma.napoleon. And my Instagram is the same. I think there might be a couple numbers, like 157 or something. But if I search up Emma Napoleon on Instagram, I should pop up. And if that doesn't work, then my TikTok is just emma.napoleon.
It sounds good. Emma, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to spend with me. I am honored to be the first podcast you have guested on. I enjoyed our conversation so much, and I hope we can do this again in the future.
Yes, of course. And thank you so much for having me. This has been absolutely amazing and letting me share some of my story and everything. And you've been so comforting and welcoming. So thank you so much.
You're quite welcome, Emma. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.